Losers.
Let's blast through a couple of things here. You brought up Source Connect, and it's something that people talk about a little bit online, and some are very aware of it and have it and use it. Others wonder if they need it. Others have no idea what we're even talking about. So Source Connect is an alternative to ISDN, and who needs that?
So Source Connect, I just used it for the first time a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco, and I used it on – I was using my MacBook Air hooked into a Verizon Jetpack 4G LTE network, and then Source Connect, I bridged to out of here. Out of here, then called Studio City, which is Alan's ISDN box, and then we bridged mm-hmm. it that way. It's not the most effective way to do it because when you bridge things, it gives even a longer delay. So it gets a little frustrating. So I wouldn't call Source Connect a replacement to ISDN, but it's a good substitute when you need it.
When you're recording to tape, when you're recording to picture, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. And there is that delay, how do you do that? Because you have to drop in these cues that are, within split seconds, and you might say two words, and then you have to hit your cues.
So you still hear it real time, but they're getting it back, a second and a half or 2 seconds later. So then they have to compensate their edits after the fact. It's just really
and
one
they're
more.
Okay with that? Because I've heard, these producers, their time schedules, and the reason they want people recording live to picture is because they don't have time to be editing stuff up like that.
They're okay with that? They're okay with that one time. I mean, they're okay with that because they have to do it, or then they have to use somebody else that they've never worked with before. And, that's a lot more hassle than doing this.
So in your opinion, Source Connect, it's been around a little while. People have been chatting about it, but nobody necessarily needs to have it. And it shouldn't be considered a viable, complete replacement for an ISDN setup.
Not yet. I don't think so.
And what are your thoughts on the whole idea ISDN is, in theory, being phased out in various parts of the country and potentially everywhere at some point? What's going to happen to that world, especially, the promo world where they need you live to picture?
So I've heard that rumor for years, and especially since I do everything, out of Texas, and that's my only entry into the world for LA and New York. It always scared me to death. Like, man, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? But when I ordered this ISDN, which, by the way, it's next to impossible to figure out finally who you talk to purchase ISDN, because nobody knows uh-huh. what it is anymore. It's 30-year-old technology at this point. Uh-huh. But there's actually when I signed up for this and I finally got to the right people, they're like, oh, we're actually a new division. And I was like, well, wait a minute. I thought ISDN was going to go away. And they said, no, we're a brand new division. We've only been open a year now. There's 12 of us. And all we do is deal in special products like ISDN. So I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Let's talk about agents and managers. This has come up on almost every episode with Voice Talents. And I think of the John Carter episode I did. You know John, right?
I know that name. No.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were pals with him. So you're not. So you might know of him. But he's a successful voice talent. Doing tons of work, lots of radio imaging, commercial work, lots of work. And he was, pretty clear he does not have agents of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are people out there that don't utilize representation.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there that might like to and maybe don't know if they should or, Anyway, you have multiple forms of representation, and I would guess that you're a fan. So what are the advantages, and also what are the best ways to decide what forms of representation you should have?
It's different for everybody. For me, the representation is worth it for a lot of reasons. A is, their full-time job all day, every day is to, connect work to talent. Like that's all that they do. So they've got a larger database than I do, and they've got relationships that are older than relationships that I have. So that gains me access to those things. And also for bookkeeping purposes, it's well worth 10% or whatever for them to mm-hmm. collect checks for me and for them to chase money down and for them to write up contracts and for them to negotiate back and forth with somebody and for them to deal with all those things. So that way, all I have to do is focus on doing a good job for the client for whatever they hire me to do. That's it. Like, my focus is on nothing else but the read, but the job. And that's it. And I don't think about anything else. So that's, for me, that is well worth 10%. Now, that being said, so an agent and a manager and, you know, whoever else you want to use isn't the only way that I get work. I still get work on my own at the same time. So it's a combination of a lot of things that I get work on my own. I get work from a manager. I also get, you know, work from different agents around the country. You put all that together, I can eat things other than ramen noodles.
Nice. And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
talk about that. I'm interested. I want to get real quick, if you wouldn't mind, just to give people a frame of reference. When you first started out, let's just take from when you first booked with or first signed with Kim Dawson, the percentage of the work you book versus the work an agent or a manager books for you has probably been a sliding scale as you move through time. So at some point, were you booking more work for yourself than the agents were?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe for brief periods there, but I mean, it's all, I don't know. I don't really keep track of that. I probably should, but I try to go get work on my own. And then, you know, again, it's like auditioning. I'll send out some emails or whatever. And then I'll forget about it. And then work will come in from one source or another. I don't really keep track of who it comes from. And then I just work. So I don't know.
And I guess I ask that only to say, you know, you're a person who's now attained a certain level of success. You know, you have major gigs under your belt. You still do a ton of commercial work, but you are still out there hustling, as you said, and acquiring your own work. And you still do that now.
I do. But also, even when I get work on my own, I still give that to my manager and agents. I still let them handle it. Even I will bring them work. And by the way, that is a huge misconception for a lot of people. They're like, well, if I got work on my own, then, you know, that money should be 100% mine. Nobody else should get that. You didn't give me that job.
Well, yeah, okay, why shouldn't it? Why should your agent get a piece of something they didn't have anything to do with?
Because it's a two-way street. How do you expect them to help get you work when you don't ever help them get work? That's a real one-sided relationship, and that's not a good business relationship, in my opinion. And I mean, if you think about it, like
I agree with you.
Well, I don't know any other profession where if somebody else gets you work, the industry deal is they get you work, and you get to keep 90% of it, but they have to get 10. You know, how dare you take that 10% and I keep 90? Like, at what point are you like, you know, I need 100% of everything all the time, and I'm never going to help anybody else out. I'm never going to, you know, scratch their back and they scratch mine.
Well, and I mean, think of any job. You know, whatever you do for a company, you're earning them business.
You don't get anywhere near 90%. I don't know of a single salesperson in any job anywhere that gets 90% commission.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just not, that's not my attitude. And I guess other people can argue it and it depends. But I mean, honestly, if you have that attitude, then you may want to look at getting a different agent because you obviously don't trust your agent. You obviously don't have a good relationship with them and you shouldn't be with them really if you can't have a reciprocal relationship.
And, you know, a quick answer to this is fine, but would you or could you have been in this business without representation this entire time? You know, is that something you would or could have done?
Well, at the time that I started, no, because, you know, there was really no way to get work on your own except for literally picking up the phone and, you know, calling. I don't even know who you'd call. I mean, I guess you would call production companies and ad agencies and, man, but that's a hard road. That's the only way I would know how to do it. Other than that, agents at that time were the only way to get work. It was before, you know, these websites popped up to where you could, you know, pay a certain fee a year and get access to auditions. That didn't exist. All that is really recent.
And I'm glad you brought that up. That's where I was going next. I wanted your opinion on, I think some people call them pay-for-play type sites.
Yeah.
So I want your opinion on these because, you know, some people say they've caused a precipitous decline in the amount of revenue, you know, independent talent can make. They've resulted in huge declines in the amount of business an agency can pull in. I'm not saying that. Other people have said, and I've actually found some success with them, that they have a lot of value on their own, but don't have a lot of negative effects like some people are saying. What are your thoughts on these?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain because it's a really broad area of work. So they're just saying, well, it's damaged voiceover work, period. But there's a lot of different types of work that are involved in those websites. So you've got commercial work, you've got industrial work, you've got narration, you've got on hold things, you've got, you know, stuff that's just going to be on the web. You've got things that are just going to be internal business presentations, whatever. I mean, my opinion is those sites are best for, in my experience, for the internal business work or instructional videos or for, you know, industrial work. That's what those sites are good for. And those sites are also very competitive, if not a lot of times above what the regular scale is. So in that area, it's been great for me. In the areas of commercial, though, it is really low on there. I don't even audition for commercial stuff on there because it is really, 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 really low.
So you've chosen, though, and probably by virtue of your financial success elsewhere, you don't really have to worry about it, but you've chosen to go after the industrial stuff or the non-commercial work on those sites.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, it's because it's a fair marketplace in there for those types of jobs. You know, you can pick and choose whatever you want. And also, listen, man, if you've got a rough month and you don't know where your mortgage is coming from, you got to do what you got to do. And if anybody, you know, thinks that you're a bad person for doing that, they just, I don't know, I guess they haven't had hard times before. And I guess they haven't been paying attention to the economy that's been here for the last 5 years. You know, listen, man, you do what you got to do. But for the corporate narration things, it's really fair. And with the commercial gigs, I choose not to do those because A, the rates are usually pretty low. And not competitive. And B, you know, there's conflicts when you do commercial work. When you do internal narration, there's no conflict.
What about radio, though, versus TV? Aren't the conflicts different, radio versus television?
Yeah. So in TV, if you voice, you know, a fast food restaurant that's on a TV spot in Dubuque, Iowa.
Right.
And you do that, and then McDonald's comes calling. And they're like, hey, we want you to be the voice of McDonald's, national work. You're going to have thousands of spots to do this year. Technically, you're not supposed to do that because you did Bob's Burgers in Dubuque, Iowa. So,
that's TV.
That's TV.
That's not radio, right?
That's not radio, and I don't know why. That's a good question, and I'm not 100% sure.
That's just something for people to think about. There's definitely different restrictions, especially in the commercial world, from television to radio to web, et cetera.
Yeah.
As far as rates go, as you say, you still are out there getting work on your own. Do you have a rate card, or do you never make it a point to specifically say, this is how much it costs, take it or leave it? Do you always try and sort of, you know, wiggle around and find out what they want to spend?
So I don't. That's where my manager comes into play. And any work that I get, I don't bring up money at all. That's not my place. I just try to go out and get some work. And as far as the money aspect goes, I always, you know, forward them to my manager and I let them handle it.
So you go out and try and hustle for jobs and say, look, man, I'm awesome. Come check me out. Come hire me for your next thing. And they're like, awesome. Yeah, let's hire you. How much do you cost? Oh, all right. Here you go. Here's
say, hey, let me introduce you to, you know, my rep here. And they handle all the business stuff. So you and I can just focus on the creative. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Man, I had so many things we wanted to talk about. We got a lot. We heard a lot of your backstory, which is fun. You got to get going. How much time do you have?
I'm actually pretty good. But I mean, you're going to have a lot of editing here, so I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all right. I think it's good stuff. Nobody's ever told me, hey, man, stop with the long episodes.
Right.
So I'm happy with that no one's like, hey, shut the hell up and stop running on so long. So I'll keep going because I love the information and I think it's good for all these perspectives. Let's get into the tech a little bit. I know that you're relatively savvy when it comes to the technical side of things. Let me start by saying, do you think it is necessary or it would at least behoove the talent in some way to really try and learn about, you know, processing and microphones and DAWs and sound cards and all that? Or do you think it's really they shouldn't be wasting their time in that arena?
No, you definitely should learn those things. But I think you need that. That comes later on down the line. That's when you start fine tuning things. First and foremost, you need to get coaching and learn how to do this job in the first place, because all those other things are technicalities and, you know, the things that just help like a tiny little bit. But, you know, you can buy Eric Clapton's guitar from him and that's great. But if you don't know how to play it, you're not going to sound like Eric Clapton. So it really doesn't matter what guitar you have. So you really need to learn how to play the instrument first and then get into how the instrument is recorded.
So obviously the instrument is the voice, and we won't talk too long about that. Actually, I don't really want to get into it too much because I've talked about it a lot in the past, but, you know, coaching, honing your craft and all that.
That is first and foremost. That is the most important thing and where your biggest investment should be.
So let's assume that people have, you know, done their due diligence on that side of thing and they have a skill set and mm-hmm. they've figured out. Okay. But as far as the tech goes, if you have nothing, you just know that you've taken some lessons or you're an actor and you want to transition over to this side, you know, but you have nothing. What is the first place or what are the first thing or two that someone should buy to get their own little setup going, in your opinion?
Start simply. I mean, I don't think you should really buy anything. If you can just download Audacity or some kind of program like that, and then, you know, you just learn how to take breaths out of sentences. And, mm-hmm. you know, really you just try to learn every facet of the job of everybody that's involved in the industry. So on that part, you try to learn what it's like to be, you know, the engineer sitting in that chair editing your voice all day. Like, that's all these people do. So you need to learn, like, what it's like to be that guy. And then you need to learn what it's like to be the account executive that's the in-between the ad agency and the client. Okay, what does that person do? You need to learn what a producer does and, you know, how they are figuring out budgets and how they, you know, figure out studio times and how they've – all these things. And you need to figure out what the copyright – you need to learn all facets of it all the way around, because it's all a huge, huge team effort.
Mm-hmm. But, again, just to stay on the tech side of it, you know, you're going to need a microphone.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're going to need some sort of an audio interface. I mean, yeah, Audacity is a great place to start. I've mentioned that in the past. If you want to spend no money and just record simple tracks of your audio, do you have any recommendations on areas that, you know, voiceover pros can start in the realm of microphones and audio interfaces and that kind of equipment?
You know, as far as the interface goes, like what I use on my Rode rig is my Centrance Micport Pro. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's the USB interface that goes in between the microphone and laptop or computer or whatever you use. You know, it's like $150 and it sounds awesome. So you definitely need that. As far as microphones go, I don't know, man. It seems like there's new things popping up every day.
You might not be a mic geek. That's fine. But
yeah, I mean,
do you need to buy a 416? Can you buy something in the $100 range? $500
range? No, you don't need a 416 when you're starting out. No, you just need a microphone. You need something that doesn't sound like a podcast. You know, you can find a decent mic for, you know, $100 to $200 really easy.
I think it's important for people to hear this, like, from you. You know what I mean? They need to hear it from big time.
At the end of the day, you know, it's all about your instrument, not what is there to capture it. But I mean, I know it's like, well, you know, then it doesn't matter what I buy. Well, it kind of does. Once you get to a certain point, like then it really does matter, just because it needs to match up with the rest of the world. But I mean, that's really the only reason why.
I'll get into a little more of this in an upcoming tech show I have, so that's fine. As far as the room goes, this is something we've brought up in the past, and in my opinion, it's one of, aside from the skill set using your voice, it's one of the most, if not the most important thing a voiceover talent should have.
Yeah, the room is way more important than the microphone, for sure.
Right. So I know you've actually done a ton of DIY stuff for your home setup. Do you have any tips on cool things people can do for on the cheap?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, on the cheap, your closet is amazing. It is really, really cool what clothes can do for you, and strategically placed pillows in corners to make it not sound like you're in a coffin. Mm-hmm. That's the cheapest way. For sure. You know, blankets, comforters, moving blankets, you know, bed egg crates you buy at Walmart. I mean, it's ugly, but
yeah,
it all does a great, great job. But, you know, depends on how often you're working in your closet. I mean, if you're working in your closet 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, then yeah, you need to step it up just for your own sanity. So what, or do you want to know about MySpace or?
Yeah, yeah, I was actually just going to say, but you've done some DIY stuff for the entire room.
Yeah, so what I did is, luckily my brother's an architect, and one of the ways he started out was designing rehearsal spaces for band studios in high schools. So he knew he could tell me all the acoustic treatments to do, you know, just the fundamentals of making a room. Don't get into the supplies and the materials, but just here's how it's designed. Because that's free. That doesn't cost anything. And you can find all this stuff online, too. It's just, you know, easy accessibility for me because I just had to call my brother. And we have a detached garage at our house because it's an old house. It was built in 1928. So when you had a car in 1928, there was a fire hazard. You didn't park that in your house because your house would blow up, like guaranteed. So that's why they made detached garages. And that was one of the reasons we got this house. And so I transformed about a quarter of the garage into my studio. So it's completely separate from the house.
Are you going to send me pictures of this? I think you are, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, this will be cool. This will be on show notes page on the site. I like your space. I think you did great work with that little space back there.
Yeah, so I wanted to be in one room. I don't like being in a booth.
Well, and I don't know if you were going to bring this up. I'm sorry, I interrupt you. But you also wanted to be detached. Not just because it was already detached and there was a space there, because there's a lot of noise that goes on in your house, right?
Well, yeah, I've got a 4.5-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and an 11-month-old, so yeah. I can't every 10 minutes or so. hey, stop it! Like I can't do that. That's not gonna fly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really important for me, for my needs, to have a detached space. I mean, I don't even think a basement thing would work. I mean, we don't have basements here in Texas anyway, but I mean, that's a lot of foot traffic up above. So that's not even an option. But I like a room as opposed to just being in a little box for X amount of time. And
yeah.
I've got a window so I can see outside too. That's big for me. Even if I don't get to go outside all day, I at least know outside exists.
Yeah. and anything else about any other, now let's say for somebody who's, you know, moderate, you know, someone who's a bit of a pro, they've been at it a while, other cool things in your studio that you must have?
Yeah, I've got a Telesever. I've got two of them, one for a backup. I've got backups of everything just in case something fails. So I've got two of everything. I've got two Zephyrs. I've got my preamp is a John Hardy M1 preamp.
How long have you had that?
6 or 7 years, I think.
Okay, so you use a 416 now, or do you go between? Do you have a TLM 103?
I've got a 103, but it's just my backup. So my 416, that's the only mic I really use.
And that goes into the John Hardy
M1,
and then the
M1 goes into my what's it called?
Hold on. You have an M box. What do you use?
No.
A Digi 03.
Apogee Duet.
Oh, that's right. You have one of those. That's right.
And yeah, because I had an inbox for a while, but it always sounded like muddy and kind of cloudy to me, like something was going on.
Yeah, mine went to crap. I had to throw the darn thing away.
So
yeah.
A buddy of mine told me about the Duet, and so I bought it, and I was like, whoa, it's like somebody unplugged my ears. Like it sounds amazing. So
yeah.
It goes into that, and then that goes into my Mac. And then that goes into Pro Tools, and I'm done. It's a really simple
Duet,
chain.
Is that a USB interface?
FireWire.
That's FireWire interface. And is that two inputs? Is that two mono inputs?
Yes. Yeah, I don't have any processing. All the processing is done internally with plugins and Pro Tools.
And then you're sending out, I mean, you pretty much send out uncolored audio, colorless audio, basically. I mean, you're not putting much processing on yourself because the people you send your audio to don't want that, right?
It depends. It depends who it's going to. For instance, like with CNBC, I'm pretty sure, I think it just goes right to the video editor. So there's no audio editor at all. I don't think. I don't. I could.
So you
be
put
wrong.
A little mustard on that.
So I put a little. It's not much, but I mean, you know, it's the same processing that I've got. Right, I keep it on all the time. Right now, it's just a little bit of EQ. You know, a bit of a gate in case a truck drives by or a dog barks. And a little bit of compression, and that's it.
And do you use Waves plugins?
Yeah. So the workhorse I use the most is Audio Track.
Yeah. Okay. You're still using that. Awesome.
Oh yeah. I love Ricky Roo. Have you showed it to me when we worked together?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that on my chain a long time. Have you checked out? Do you have any of the newer Waves bundles? Have you ever updated your Waves bundle in a while?
No, because I only use one plugin now. Now that I don't do any producing anymore, I don't have time.
They released Channel Strip. And it's. I can't pull it open because I'm recording right now. Anyway, you might check that out someday.
Okay. It's
very cool. It does the same thing. Essentially, Audio Track, for those that don't know, does three or four different things in one plugin.
Yeah, it's a compressor, gate, and EQ all in one.
Right. Right. Do you roll off a little low end and pop up a little high end, basically?
Kind yeah, of a little bit. Thing? I mean, not a ton. So the 416 has a really noisy floor, and it has a really, really boomy bottom end.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is a low. The low end is, boomy, good word.
So I do roll that off a little bit, but I mean, other than that, I don't mess with it too much.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it just depends who the source is.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, like I said, we could probably go on here forever and ever. I did want to get into some of the tech. People like to hear about setups, especially when the setup is relatively simple. I think it's good for people to know you do not need to go out and buy 15 different outboard processors, an outboard EQ, you know, an ADDA converter. You don't need to have all that stuff.
No, I mean, honestly, the only reason I put processing on is just because I have a production background, and that's just what I just do it for me, really. I've never had anyone ever call back and complain about the quality of anything, whether I put something on it or I didn't.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, I've never rarely even had anybody on the other end, you know. I mean, maybe the engineers ask me what I'm working on, but as far as the people that are actually hiring me, the producer or copywriter or whoever, they've never, ever asked me what am I recording on. Not one. They don't care. It doesn't matter.
Well, cool, man. Well, we haven't, you and I haven't actually chatted in a little while, but, you know, you've got the Ellen job, CNBC Prime. You've done trailers. We didn't even get into the trailers, but I remember when I saw your... Stooges trailers, right? Weren't you doing the Stooges trailers?
Yeah, for the Three Stooges movie. Yeah, that was.
I was in a hotel room, like zoned out. I think I was in Nashville at the time, and I'm just barely awake. And I hear you start talking to me.
Yeah, so that's where a manager comes into play. Is that's who gets you into the trailer world. By the way, like without a manager, yeah. I don't even know how, because we tried to get into the trailer world on our own without a manager, just me and my wife. That's a whole other, man, we could talk about that for a long time. That's a whole other story. But that was one world we could not get into was trailer. Managers are the entry into that. And the reason is because they have personal relationships with these people. So they see them face to face and they have lunch with them and they have dinners with them and they see them at award shows and they, you know, go have drinks or whatever. So they develop these personal relationships and nobody else develops that. So managers are the only ones that really do that.
So you did I think you've done a couple of them now, but are you finding more work in that arena or?
Yeah.
Or is that
Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, it's chipping away at it. It's not like, you know, it's a really slow process. All of these things, you have to be really patient. So like last year I got my first trailer ever. And then I got like one or two little projects after that. And then I didn't have anything for a while. And then I worked on like five or six different trailer projects last year. This year, I think maybe a few more than that, but they were bigger movies, so they were bigger campaigns, and they paid more. But it's not. But I'm not like doing trailer stuff on a consistent regular basis yet. I mean, that's definitely on my radar for sure. That's where you want to be. But it's a really really slow process.
On the commercial side, you've had tons of success there. Any major things in the works right now that we should be looking for?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm really at a point that I literally I just do things. Like, I'll get an email or a phone call, and I either go to a session or do it from here, and I do it, and then I'm done with it. I really don't retain anything. Mm-hmm. That's horrible.
No, that's fine.
That's why I feel really bad now. Like, duh, who are you? Like, you don't even, oh, okay, mister, I don't remember what I've done today. Like, I really don't.
I think if you had something, you know, like a national Burger King campaign coming out, you'd probably remember that.
No, so. I mean, I don't have, I've got a lot of, you know, little things, you know, but I don't have like a huge, like, you know,
fine.
Like voice of Ford right now or anything like that.
Right.
No,
I don't know if anyone knows. Alan's just his real name. I mean, his stage name is
Mike Rowe.
Yeah. Mike Rowe. Yeah. It would have been better if I could have spit that out the first try, but.
But I will say for the jobs that I do, man, it is a really, really cool community, just all the way around, from you know, the actual voice talent themselves to the producers behind the scenes and the engineer. Everybody, it's the coolest environment, and everybody is just so cool, because I feel like everybody realizes how cool of a job we all have if we get to be a part of it. And it's really, I'm just so excited and so happy to be doing what I do every day. And I feel like everybody, for the most part, you know, really feels the same way. And, you know, we kind of, you and I both worked in the same environment in the end there, and it got to be really toxic there for a while. And to see people happy in their jobs is, it's really amazing. Even though I don't get to see anybody, I can hear them be happy, and that makes me happy.
You're aware of their happiness.
Yeah, and it's just, man, like 99.99% of the time, it is amazing. And I'm like, am I really getting paid to do this? Because this is kind of silly, but it is awesome.
Yeah. Well, congrats, man. I'm glad to be your friend, and you've helped me immensely, as I mentioned before. You're my go-to guy when I have questions about, you know, is this gig for real? You know, this agent, is that?
Anytime. So man, you know, and anybody who's listening to this, if you ever have questions about anything regarding, you know, voiceover or just anything at all, like, please reach out, and I'll help out in any way that I can. I mean, the names that I reached out to that helped me, I still have emails from Bo Weaver and from Joe Cipriano and from Don LaFontaine. You know, when I was first starting out, telling me how they do it and how it's done. And it's amazing to reach out to people. It's that simple. Just send an email to somebody you look up to and somebody that you aspire to be one day. Tell them that. Reach out to them, and don't say, I want to be just like you, but you know what I mean? Like, I would like to be doing what you're doing. How are you doing that? And you'll be amazed at who responds, not just in voiceover world, but just anything in any facet of business or life or whatever. The people that are at the top of their game realize they don't have any competition, and they will give you every secret in the book, because there is no secret. The secret is, don't give up and work harder than anybody else in the room. And that's it. Like, that's really it. There's nothing to it other than those two things. There's a lot of things involved in those two steps. But I mean, really, that's it.
Well, that's great, man. Appreciate it. AlanPeck.com. They can go get at you there. I know you're all over Facebook or Twitter or whatever, but they can go find you. So we'll just start them off at your website. All right, Alan, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks.
And yes, thanks again to Alan. We had a great chat. Like, as you notice, people I know well, we can go on forever. I think I finally just had to say we both have to be done. And I love chatting with Alan. We talk, you know, shop all the time. We hang out. Ironically, we hang out a bit. You know, he's got a big family now, and we don't live, you know, I'm in Arlington, Texas, in the middle of the Metroplex, and he's over in Dallas. But we couldn't get together for the interview. It's just too difficult with, you know, I've got a job. I've got plenty going on during the day. But, you know, he's darn near the golden handcuffs situation in the voiceover world. I think I've brought that up a couple times, but Chris Corley was certainly one of those people. I remember we brought that up. But Alan is definitely getting there. He's told me that there's been many times, you know, multiple times where he's had to, he's left the house just to go to the market and had to immediately turn around. So he's, you know, lucky, not lucky guy. I hate to throw the word luck around, to be totally honest. I know Alan did, but I think the word luck gets used too much. People have skill and they develop their skill. They work really hard and they achieve, you know, their goals. And there's not a ton of luck involved in that. So anyway, I'm not a big, you know, I don't believe in luck. We'll just say that. Anyway, thanks to Alan. One more time, I'll just recap what's coming up. If you happen to have only caught the part two here and you're sitting through my outro, I appreciate that. If you're hearing this on November, 8th or earlier, November 8th, 11 a.m. Eastern time, we'll have a tech roundtable. It will be a Google Hangout. So I actually haven't done one live before. I did one recorded. So we'll just have to figure out if it's really obvious, but I will shoot a link out once we go live on Twitter and Facebook, and I'll post it on my website. There is a post right there at the top of my blog. So I hope you can check us out if you want to. You don't have to. We don't rely on people being there for this live show. But whatever we do in this tech roundtable, I will then post it as a podcast. But if you'd like to submit questions, topics you want us to cover, it's going to be Jeff Berlin, who is an extremely tech-savvy voiceover artist, who has an extreme, strong background in radio imaging production as well, Kiss Boston, amongst other things. Anyway, also Steve Sykes, who is an extremely tech-savvy producer, but really good at discussing it in terms the average person like me can understand. So I will sort of captain the boat. I know some stuff, but these guys, I'm going to really try and get them detail-focused on tech issues for the voice talent and the radio imaging talent. And that'll be happening, as I said, November 8th, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. my time central. It'll be a Google Hangout, so come join us or check it out later. Upcoming, Brian Cooney, an interview with him, great voice talent, and heard all over television and all over radio. One of the voices of DC 101 is why somebody, one of the people requested him. Also a great promo voice, really a fun dude to chat with. And then Joe Cipriano, going to finally bring him on the podcast. I mean, he's been interviewed so many times that I didn't want to inundate him. You know, like, hey, man, can you do yet another interview? I've known him a long time, though, and definitely a guy I look up to. I love Sip. Heck of a nice guy, but, you know, very, very good at what he does. Anyway, he's released a book called Living on Air. We're going to chat about that eventually. That'll be probably in December sometime. But sooner than that, I'll have a post on my site to look forward to if you would like to win a copy of his book. Maybe I'll talk him into giving away more than one. Anyway, that'll be on my website, and then the interview with Joe Sip will be coming up. Joe Cipriano will be coming up soon as well. All right, that'll do it. I think that's plenty, right? Thanks so much for checking it out here. RyanOnTheRadio.com, Twitter, at RDreen. We got the Pod Prod on the Facebook. And if you want to join the email list, you can do that as well. Just sign up at RyanOnTheRadio.com. All right, thanks. Bye.